Today's episode features my favorite New Zealander, and I have no doubt you're going to love her as much as I do.
I'm Cameron. I spent years building my career and creating a life I loved. And when my Prince Charming finally showed up, he had 4 kids in tow. Fast forward through lots of mistakes made and lessons learned, stepfamily life was much more complicated than I realized. If you're looking for help with blended family life, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Stepmom Diaries, where we keep it real as we dish about all the things. This is your weekly dose of blended family inspiration and encouragement. You're not the wicked stepmother, so let me help you find your fairy tale ending. Come on, let's do this.
Hello, hello, welcome. Today's guest is truly one of my favorite stepmom coaches. She is someone who is super down to earth, and her, yes, sometimes blunt advice is always spot on. And she is someone who has helped me succeed in this world of coaching. As a stepchild, divorced mother, and stepmother, Anita Inglis has been part of a stepfamily for most of her life. This gives her really important insight into the varied and sometimes complex dynamics at play within the step and divorced families she works with. She brings her personal experience and years of mentoring, along with graduate and postgraduate qualifications in psychology, to her work. As a survivor of childhood trauma, Anita understands the additional challenges that being a trauma survivor adds to the stepfamily dynamic. And having experienced a very high conflict custody situation and pathogenic parenting, Anita is well versed in how to maintain relationships with children who are experiencing pressure to reject the targeted parent and family. Anita operates from a narrative therapy perspective, believing that the stories we tell ourselves, the stories that are told about us, and the stories of those we interact with are all key in determining how happy our relationships are. Anita is also always one of our most popular speakers at the Stepmom Summit, and this year's summit, which was just a few weeks ago, was no exception. Anita is also the founder of the Institute of Stepfamily Dynamics, and she was the co-founder of Stepfamily Magazine, which Beth McDonough and I acquired from her last year. On a personal note, I am so grateful for Anita, her friendship, and her work in this area, and her mentorship. I'm so excited to have her here. So let's jump in.
Anita, I'm so excited that you're here. Welcome.
Thank you. It's really good to be here.
I'll have to tell you, I've been looking forward to this all week because I feel like, y'all know by now, but Anita is halfway across the world in New Zealand, and it's very rare that we get to chat face to face. So I've been excited all week because I always love talking to Anita, and she always gives like just a dose of like real sage, solid advice. So I think this is going to be really fun. So Anita, you know, you spoke at our recent Stepmom Summit, which was awesome as always. And I will put a link in the show notes. If you missed the summit and missed Anita's talk, you can still go back and get it. So I'll put a link in the show notes for that. But, you know, you have talked a lot about, and you have a lot of experience with high conflict situations and parental alienation. And so I thought that that would be something. I always use the word fun when it's talking to Anita, but those are not really fun topics, right?
I do try to make it fun though, you know.
But let's talk about, because I think that the words high conflict and the words parental alienation are words that get thrown around a lot. Let's start with parental alienation. Let's talk about like tell me what that means and why it's not always, I think it's really easy for us to throw around those words. So talk to me about that and why it's not always parental alienation and what that actually looks like when it is.
I think that's such a good place to start. And one of the other things to be aware of, particularly if you're involved in the court process, is that the whole topic of parental alienation is highly controversial, right? And one of the reasons it's controversial is because the person who coined the phrase initially studied high conflict mothers denying contact with the father. And so it then became this thing about bitter, angry women are the ones who do parental alienation. And subsequently, he did a study and he found out it was about 50-50, but it's the first set of studies that are kind of leaned on. And so domestic violence campaigners see it as a way abusive men continue to abuse their female partners through the court system. So that's why you will have so many people, you'll go parental alienation, and they'll go, ah! And that's also why it hasn't got, it's not recognised as a disorder in the DSM, and it's just one of those things. So it's not a term you just go bandying about for, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
Shits and gigs, right? It's not, so my personal preference is, I like the Childress model of pathogenic parenting, which talks about the parent, right? So parental alienation is actually when a child rejects a healthy parent. But a lot of people use it to describe the behavior of the parent. But that's not technically correct. But common usage, you know, we use it now. But I think that, so just being aware that, A, it's not officially recognized. So you don't, there's a lot of judges and lawyers and psychologists and stuff who won't use that term because of all of those reasons. So just because somebody's not saying and agreeing it's parental alienation doesn't mean that they cannot recognize the toxic behaviors of a high conflict person. So I think there's that. And then the second one is that, you know, when people break up, let's say somebody has an affair and they partner with the affair partner, and then mom is ticked and not like full of the joys of spring about sending her kids over to that person that stole her man. You know, I mean, that's probably normal range grief and rage and betrayal. That's not necessarily parental alienation. And that may actually shift and change as she works through all of the grief and stuff. So I think, you know, it's, some of it is just a stage in terms of a response to recoupling and all that kind of thing. But when, in my experience, when you have real parental alienation, there's normally a set of pathology that sits behind that with the aligned or alienating parent. And that is that they tend to have some attachment issues from their childhood. They may have some personality disorder traits. I'm not diagnosing personality disorders, but there'll be some traits. Most commonly, some narcissistic traits and some borderline personality traits. Now, notice me saying traits, right? We all have those traits, right? But it's like, and they may not actually fit diagnostic criteria to be diagnosed with that particular set of disorders, but there will be behaviors that are in alignment with some of those well-recognized traits.
Well, and I think that it's important to point that out, and I'm glad you did, that they may have the traits, but like it's not up to you as the stepmom to diagnose them. Right? No, and leave that to the professionals. And it's not up to us as coaches, right? I mean, that's something they've got to work out with their, I mean, you know, we can talk about traits and talk about high conflict and all of that may be true, but you know, that's not our place, right?
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, if everybody that got called a narcissist was actually a diagnosed narcissist, I mean, I think like a third of the world would be narcissists, right? And it's really
something more.
Like, yeah, easy, you know, but it's like, yeah, there's traits. And I think it's important to look at, are those responses to situations, right? So a response to a particular set of stimuli, or are they deeper than that and like a core kind of set of behaviors? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And I think that it's easy to throw stuff out and say that that's what it is when maybe it's something a little different. Maybe it is situational. And maybe, like in the example that you used, maybe she grows out of it as she grieves and moves past her anger, you know? Maybe she doesn't. And maybe it actually is parental alienation. Maybe she is, you know, brainwashing the kids and telling them, you know, the other house is evil and all, you know, whatever it is that she's feeding them. How can stepmom, you know, it's a hard situation, right? Because stepmom is forming this new second family and trying to support her spouse, dealing with, you know, stuff. If the kids are coming over saying, well, you know, mom said you're a real jerk and your cooking sucks too. You know, and then maybe it escalates to a place where the child no longer wants to come over. And says, well, fine, you don't have to go over to their house because they're terrible people anyway. How can stepmom support her partner in a situation like that?
Yes, that's a very good question, because I think very often men with high conflict, strong-willed exes also tend to repartner with strong-willed women. They have a type. and you know,
my husband would tell you you're right.
And some of us like to use our strength for good, and some of us have a different view of what using our strength for good looks like, right? So I think one of the really important things is to just allow your partner to make the decisions and call the shots. Like, we have a rule in our house, and it probably doesn't feel as great a rule for stepmoms who don't have children, but we both have kids. And so we had a rule right from the beginning of bio parent wins, or parent wins. So if there was a disagreement between my husband and I about his kids, he got the final say. I would, you know, have my shot at convincing him, sometimes more than once, but at the end of the day, I'd have to go, eh. And I do remember us having a huge fight in the early days and me standing there screaming at him, if this is how much of a shitty parent you're going to be, I don't even know if I want to be with you anymore, right? Because he wasn't doing something that I felt was really important, you know. But we found our way through. So I think that even if, you know, and I mean, it's kind of balances out because he does the same for me, but I think that at the end of the day, it's mum and dad who have all of the legal and financial responsibility, and they are the ones who are finally responsible. Like, we feel incredibly responsible as stepmoms, I think, you know, and sometimes over responsible, but really we're not. And so, and the other thing is, if he's spent years battling, or she has spent years battling this high conflict person, they know them really well, right? And they know if you poke here, you're probably going to get this response. And that's not going to be a reasonable, logical response. Whereas I think when we as newcomers come into the situation, we're like, well, I mean, it just should. You should have, would have, could have, didn't, right? And our partner.
Oh, my God, that's so true.
Because we kind of can't fathom that anybody would behave like that. I remember just sitting there absolutely gobsmacked going, how could you be doing this to your children? Can you not see how damaging this is? Why would you do that? And I mean, people who are doing that kind of stuff are not running on reason and logic.
Well, and you know, I love that you're saying, can't you see this? Because they can't.
No,
in their view, in the view of the high conflict person, they're doing what they think is best. And that's really hard to keep in mind. It's really hard, you know, to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, well, they, you know, whatever it is they're doing, this is what they think is best. Now, they may think it's best for them and not be thinking about the kids, but it's what they think is best. And it's hard when it's something that you can so clearly see is terrible for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that brings up a really good point. So in the Childress model of pathogenic parenting, what he talks about is the fact that the aligned / alienated parent can't actually separate out their needs from the children's needs, right? So as far as they're concerned, the children are just an extension of them. So what they want is what the child wants, and there's no space or capacity to understand that those things can be different. And also, because of the emotional toll that aligned alienating parent exerts when the child expresses an opinion or a want or a desire that is counter to the parent, they get punished emotionally, you know, all of that kind of thing. It becomes unsafe for that child to sing from a different song sheet. That's why quite often you'll have kids who split. So they'll actually have two quite distinct personalities. And we had that happen with our kids, particularly the eldest. You know, in one house, he wanted to grow up and be, look after birds in the zoo. And then in the other house, because mum really likes birds and they have a lot of birds. And in our house, he wanted to be an IT guy because we use computers, you know, and it was really so dramatic and stark. So I think they don't see that the child, and there's no space for the child to express safely a want or a need counter to that parent.
So how do you navigate that as stepmom? I mean, it's really hard, right? Because you see this heartbreaking situation with your spouse. And
yeah.
And you know, on so many levels, it's like you want to be able to jump in and say, stop this. Don't you see what you're doing? It's so terrible. But you can't. That's not your place. And you know, so how do you navigate it?
So I used to have an email folder filled with venti emails where I told her exactly what she was doing wrong and why. And then I would take those out periodically and hone them to an even sharper point. I never sent them. Right. But that was incredibly cathartic for me, because I think one of the things that as stepmoms, we lose our voices. We just sometimes, you know, I used to go and have to pick the kids up, and I would be literally praying as I drove, you know, the hour to get them. Please don't let me throat punch you. Please don't let me throat punch you. Please don't let her say something that makes me want to throat punch you. Like, honestly, because I was like on the edge of really just letting rip because of, you know, I'm not going to go into all the things, but it was bad. And so I think that that's the self-care is really important, you know, and actually maintaining your own balance and having a good, solid group of friends who get it and who will call you on your shit, right? You don't want the friends who sit there and go, oh, my God, she's the worst, blah, 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 and just kind of enable you and help you kind of, you know, marinate in all that toxicity. You want to have people who will say, well, have you got any part in that? Or maybe, like, have you thought about it like this? And just to kind of give you a counter viewpoint, I think that's incredibly important. And just allowing your partner to take the lead. And in order to do that, you have to be solid in yourself, right, and not feel like you're giving your power away. And I guess the other thing is, like, parallel parenting is essential in those situations. Like, there is no co-parenting when the other parent won't co-parent, right? So you have to parallel parent. So that means your house, your rules. So how we talked about it was my darling and I made the decisions in our house. He attempted to co-parent as per his legal guardianship obligations outside of our house. But in our house, it was the two of us. And I remember when they were younger, like before they were 10. And we always timed in rather than timing out. There's a lot of good reasons why you do that. But it's basically, especially with kids who are being alienated, the last thing you want to do is send them away, right? And kind of isolate them when they have done something that's not so great. So we would time them in, and they would sit down and they go, my mum said you're stupid. You and Dad are stupid because you don't send us to our rooms. And I would go, oh, that's interesting. And so then we'd have a conversation. I go, oh, so do you think mum makes the rules in this house? Yes. And I go, oh, I don't see mum here. And does Dad make the rules in mum's house? No. Well, then why would mum be making the rules here? Mum's not even here. How can she make the rules somewhere where she's not? Huh? And then if I was feeling particularly annoyed, I go, and so how often do you get sent to your room? And what do you do when you're in your room? We play or we make a big mess. They used to destroy their rooms when they got sent to their rooms. And I go, and who has to clean that up, mum? And I go, and does that stop you doing that thing? No. And I go, well, then why would we send you to your room? Right? So that's critical thinking. You actually just unpack it with them. Instead of going, mum's wrong, sending you to your room's dumb, all you do is mess it up and play, what good's that? They don't, they're just going to shut that out and tune that out because the loyalty binds are just going to be like a solid barrier to that. But if you actually get them to think about it and respond, that's the magic. That's the secret sauce. That's why we have three teams who are awesome and connected and love being with us and have relationship, when we had three preteens who were telling all the court people they didn't want to be in our house.
Well, and I love that. And I love that you brought up parallel parenting, because that's something that, I want to talk a little bit about that. I mean, I think that's something, you know, stepmoms feel such an obligation to like make things work. And, you know, we put so much pressure on ourselves to like work within this, you know, construct that we found when we got there, instead of sort of taking a look at it and saying, you know what, honey, this isn't working for anybody. Let's try a different way. So for people that are listening that are like parallel parenting, what's that? Talk a little bit about what that is and why that could be a good option. And I'll tell you, I mean, we have used some of it in our house, and I think it really does help. And I think that it helps with being able to do some of that critical thinking. And those are really great skills to be able to impart onto a young person. It's, you know, being able to, oh, I'm sorry that you had to hear that. You know, how did that make you feel? What did you think about this? And really sort of getting them to ask questions. And I mean, all of that helps in the long term with all of their relationships. But so anyway, long way of asking, tell us a little bit about what parallel parenting is and like how it can really be helpful in these kind of situations.
I think the easiest way to sum it up is your house, your rules, their house, their rules. Now, the part that people often struggle with is their house, their rules, right? Because we're all about, yes, because our rules are the good rules. Their rules are the devil, you know.
They feel the same way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Because if we didn't think our way was the best way, we wouldn't be doing it that way.
Yeah.
So I always give the example of, you know, early on in my ex-husband and I split, I was like, he's got just as much right to fuck up those kids as I do, right? Because he does, he's their father. And I mean, we do, we are. I mean, like, we told our kids from an early age, get good jobs, therapy's expensive, you're going to need it, you know, because we are sometimes crappy parents. And yep. So I think that, and so he did some things, you know. And I mean, like, my kids he worked overnight, and they would stay by themselves, and they would be up at 2-3 in the morning watching R-rated movies at like 11 and 13. And I could have been like, and I went, they are fed, they are safe, they are happy, they value their relationship with their dad. They may be a little more wealthy than some of their counterparts, but it's not going to kill them, you know. And so that's part of parallel parenting, is just actually being able to let go and say, it's their right to fuck those kids up just as much as it is ours. And that's really hard. I think that's really hard to kind of go and allow that to happen. You know, and another thing that I always say to people is like, they're like, oh, I mean, like the littlest one would come over when she was 2 and I would spend half an hour combing the knots out of her hair, right? Like she'd come over with bird's nests and, you know, and I mean, I'd be like, oh, that's neglect. And oh, I'd get on my high stepmum horse. That terrible parenting, blah, 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 blah. And then it's like, is it child services notification worthy? Mm-mm. And if it isn't, it's not a thing. And the other thing is, before everybody starts running off to child services, neglect is one of the hardest things to prove and is very rarely ever a catalyst for any meaningful change, right? So we can't control what's happening in the other house. All we can do is work on making their experience in our house a formative, solid one. And one of the best pieces of research that I read years and years and years ago is that kids who have one stable, solid home, even if the other house is chaotic and not great, the outcomes for those kids are not too dissimilar to kids who have one really good, solid home or two good, solid homes. So I think there's a lot of reassurance in the fact that we can actually make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so what would you say to the stepmom who is dealing with, you know, she's dealing with the parental alienation, perhaps trying to figure out this parallel parenting, like how to navigate all this stuff? Like, what's the first thing she should do?
get a therapist or a coach?
I love that. I mean, it's so true, right?
I mean, seriously, Yeah.
In all seriousness, I mean, I think that's great advice because I think that, you know, it, first of all, being a stepmom can be so isolating and so lonely, especially if you don't have other stepmom friends. And obviously, there are a lot of communities online now, like ours and others. It can be really lonely and isolating, and having a professional that's helping navigate some of these really complicated issues, whether it's a therapist or a coach, is really, I think that's really good advice. It's really important.
Yeah. And the other thing is make sure that it's somebody who actually understands parental alienation. I cannot tell you how many people find me and then they're like, oh, but we were told, people just don't get it. And they try and make the, you know, my now clients feel responsible because it takes two to create conflict, you know, and it's a two-way street and blah, blah, blah. And if you guys were just more accommodating and this and that and everything else, everything would be fine. And that is the messaging that far too many people get given. And it's just plain wrong.
I totally agree. And I've seen that with our family too, and with different, you know, therapists and stuff that we have used over the years. I mean, it's so important to find professionals who really understand step families, because this, you know, blending, and I'm using my air quotes here, the process is so complicated and challenging that, you know, a therapist without a lot of experience in that area, I think can sometimes unintentionally do a lot of damage. And it's important that their therapists and coaches really know what they're doing there.
And I would add another layer to that and go, just because somebody's experienced in step family dynamics doesn't mean that they understand parental alienation, right?
So that's also true. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, even people who are like, oh, yeah, I know all about step, they will still try and put that lens on of like, well, if you would just be a little bit more accommodating. Actually, no. You need really solid, firm boundaries, right? And here's another thing, you know, if you are dealing with somebody who's doing parental alienation, all that kind of stuff, don't deviate from the order, right? Stick to things, keep it really solid, have really high, strong boundaries, you know, because otherwise you will just get steamrolled. One of the things in terms of the parallel parenting that might be really helpful is how do you frame that up for kids? And so I always used to go, in this house, we do. So in this house, we do this. In this house, we do. And sometimes, and because I have a pretty good relationship with them, they'd come over and they'd do something that was just like, eh. And I'd go, I think you've forgotten which house you're in. Is that how we do things in this house? And they go, no, sorry, no.
I was just going to say, I know a lot of stepmoms worry about, you know, they try really hard to have sort of the same rules at both houses, keep that consistency for the kids' sake. And even, you know, it drives them crazy to trying to, you know, fit the square peg in the round hole on that. And the fact of the matter is that kids are pretty adaptable. And, you know, once they understand the parameters and once they understand what happens at your house and what the expectations are, and they understand it, they're going to be goof ups and mess ups all the time, right? Because they're kids. I mean, their brains aren't developed, but like they're pretty adaptable, as you said, you know, in the way that you frame it is perfect. You know, does that sound like something we would do here? I don't think so, you know? So I think that's important to keep in mind, because it is really tempting. And I know I made that mistake early on. Like, okay, well, we need to sit down with the other house and come up with a set of common rules because it needs to all be consistent. No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
No. And I mean, the thing is, it can't be, right? It can't be, because kids behave differently in different houses as well. That's another one of those things. Don't carry punishments over from one house to the other, right? Or more importantly, don't put punishments in place that have been put in the other house, particularly in a high conflict situation. You don't know what stressors and pressures that kid was put under the pop and do whatever they did. So it's unreasonable to punish them for something you have no context and no understanding of. That's my personal opinion, you know, that it's just like, keep it really separate. Hey, I really don't like it when you cuss out your mum. That's probably not great. But, you know, I mean, that's probably as far as it, but I mean, actually, honestly, maybe that mum deserved a bit of cussing out. Just saying.
Yeah, I know we had a couple of situations and we've done mostly parallel, but some co-parenting. And we've had a couple of situations over the years where there has been, in certain isolated circumstances, really solid co-parenting when discipline has had to be handed down because it was such a big incident. You know what I mean? Like, because it really warranted the parents needed to work together. And so sometimes it did, you know, sometimes it does work. But I agree. I think for the most part, you know, you obviously don't want them, if you change houses on a Sunday, you don't want the kid to come in Saturday night and just blow things up because they know they're going to the other house and get a free time.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, you can hold them account. But I mean, kids probably are going to blow things up on a Saturday night if they're going back to a high conflict.
Well, totally. The transition's coming and it's hard. You know, kids, I mean, I think transition days are important to talk about. And, you know, I mean, it's all interrelated. And this is why step-parenting is so complicated.
I mean, it is. And I guess the thing is, if you don't have real backing from your partner, then you're on Mission Impossible, you know. I honestly think that if your partner doesn't have your back, then get out. I mean, it's terrible. run as fast as you can.
I think almost every woman that I coach, it all boils down to, hey, you know, whatever issue is going on, are you talking about it with your partner? How is that going? Are they on the same page? Are you two working as a team? Because if you're not, you have to get there before you can do any of the other stuff.
A lot of people think that they have a high conflict mom issue. Nuh-uh. They have a partner problem. And it's so much easier to blame someone outside of the relationship and make it all her fault. But if you unpack it, you know, then it's very often that she doesn't feel supported in her home and in her role and in her relationship. And she's, you know, got mum over there as bitch eating crackers in the corner, you know, but actually no. And it's the same thing, you know, almost every time that I have a stepmom come with, I hate my stepchildren. And it's really common. So if that's you, you're not the Lone Ranger and you're not some terrible monster of a person, it's because they don't feel like they're the priority in the family unit with their partner.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
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 And so that's a couple relationship that needs the work.
And that couple relationship is the foundation of everything else. So if you can't get that straight, then, you know, you've got to before you can hit any of the other issues.
I mean, absolutely. If my husband wasn't the amazing, wonderful person that he is, it would not have been worth it, right? It wouldn't have been. And I think that's something to bear in mind. If you have any ambivalence about the relationship or there's like major issues or, you know, I mean, the number of people that I see in relation, I'm not talking clients, but just in general groups and stuff, who are with a partner who doesn't work, doesn't contribute around the house and has got a high conflict ex. I'm like, girl, what are you doing?
Yeah, I know, right? Anita, I could talk all afternoon, I swear. But you know what? We jumped into the conversation. One more question and then we'll wrap. But we jumped into the conversation. I didn't ask the question that I always ask of my guests when I start out, which is your stepmom origin story. Tell me how you met your husband and how you became a stepmom. And we'll end on that optimistic note with your wonderful spouse.
So I was doing some, this sounds really funny, but I was doing some research into groups because I was really interested in the dynamics of online groups. So I joined a dating group and they had like a message board, no, like a forum, like a, you know, where people post things and you reply and stuff like that. So I was on that. And then my husband came on and joined that group and he was just outrageous. And such an interesting thinker and all that kind of thing. But he was 10 years younger than me. So I'm like, meh, he's an interesting, cool guy. And then they had an event and I went along to the event and I met him. And yeah. And I said, when did you know? And he said, we walked from one bar to another and he put his hand on my back as we were walking up to the bar. And I said, when did you know? He goes, oh, then, when I put my hand on your back as we were walking to another bar. I'm like,
I did not know that your husband was 10 years younger than you. I love that, Anita.
Oh, he's a young hottie. Yeah, you know. That's what I always say to people when they're like repartnering. I'm like, I was fat, 43 with 4 kids. Come on. If I can land a 10-year younger hottie, anybody can repartner.
I love that so much.
Yeah. And then I ran away for a while because, you know, I was like, oh my God, he's 10 years younger. And I asked my son, who was 16 at the time, and I went, what do you think? I mean, would your friends be like weird about it? And he's like, nah, they'd go your mum. And I'm like, okay. So, and we've been together for like 12 and a half years now.
I love that so much. See, this is why I love asking people their stories. I've known you for several years now and I had no idea. Yeah. That's amazing.
I've aged him terribly, Anita, though.
I doubt that. I think you probably kept him young. Anita, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on. And as always, so many bits of wisdom and advice that are just so, so useful for all the stepmoms listening. Thank you.
Thanks, Cameron. Thanks for having me on. It was a real joy.
That's it for this week. If you've enjoyed our chat, I hope you'll help spread the word. Share this episode with friends and head on over to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave me a review. And don't forget, for more great stepmom content, head on over to thiscustomlife.com and follow me on social media. Just search This Custom Life on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest. Until next time, you keep being you and know that we are in this together. See you here next week.